report on what's going on so that we can get together and organize an audio resistance to the kind of detrimental policies being pursued by the current administration in Washington. You can do that by supporting KPFK. It's a voice of independence. It's a voice for progressives. And the number to call is 818-985-5735. I know I've been saying it a couple of times, 818-985-5735, option 2, or kpfk.org. Today's program, Robert McChesney, Capitalism in the Age of Digital Technology. Every week on alternative radio, you hear great voices like Chris Hedges, like Tariq Ali, like Norman Finkelstein, like Ralph Nader, Peter Beinart, Kuhan Pakmander, Francesca Albanese, and on and on. It's all made possible because you care enough to call KPFK and show your financial support. Any amount is most welcome. Don't feel, oh, I don't have $1,000. You don't need to have $1,000. Whatever works for your budget, give us a call at 818-985-5735. That's 818-985-5735, option 2, kpfk.org. Independent community radio serving Southern California at 90.7 FM. KPFK. Support it.
And for the folks out there that have been wanting alternative radio and wanting a time slot and asking for this show, demanding this show, we're looking out for you folks to call now and pledge your support for alternative radio. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. And David, thank you for all the great work that you're doing, and the shows that you're giving us here are just superb. And we're learning a lot of information. 818-985-5735. If you learned something from this show, call now and support. Online at kpfk.org or 818-985-5735, option 2. Thank you, David.
Thank you, and thanks to all who have called that number.
90.7 FM in Los Angeles and 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, the voice of mass dissent in Southern California.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon, friends and listeners to KPFK. This is Jim Lafferty, along with my co-host and dear friend Maria Hall, welcoming you to this week's edition of the Lawyers Guild Show. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Jim.
How's all things going with you in Trump land this week?
Oh my God, it's going. It is going. Yeah.
You've got a good show for us. Let our listeners know what's in store for them.
We definitely do. And I know it's hard to keep track of all the national news. So today we're going to get back into LA City, LA County. In our first segment, we'll be talking about the humanitarian crisis right in our own backyards. That is the fact that about 75,000 or so of our neighbors here in LA County are unhoused and unsheltered, and the fact that LA Housing Services Authority can't account for over $2 billion in taxpayer funds that were supposed to be used to help.
Yeah.
Then in our second half hour, we'll speak about the homelessness crisis throughout California, and we'll learn about some important proposed legislation aimed at strategically rethinking solutions.
Well, it sounds good. It's a sad story, but there is some hope on the horizon. I hope people will stay tuned and get to the hopeful part of the show. I know things are depressing enough these days. And when we get to the hopeful part of the show, by the way, there'll be a role for our listeners to play in helping with respect to a piece of state legislation. So let's get going.
Sure. Well, let's jump right in. So yes, the subject of homelessness, houselessness in Los Angeles is again grabbing headlines. A few weeks ago, the results of an independent audit was released of the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, also known as LASA, which revealed the agency could not account for about $2 billion taxpayer dollars that were earmarked for tackling homelessness. Within days of the audit's release, the LA County Board of Supervisors pulled hundreds of millions of dollars in funds from LASA, and then LASA's CEO resigned. And now the latest news is the Pam Bondi-led Department of Justice just announced it's investigating L.A. County for fraud, giving it an excuse to do something that I'm sure it was already chomping at the bits to do. So as city, county, and federal government officials toss around the political hot potato of who's to blame for mismanaging funds, where does that leave our 75,000 or so unhoused neighbors who continue to live without stability or safety, who are being squeezed out by new laws that restrict where they can sleep, park, toilet, and basically just breathe? To talk through these issues, I'm so happy to welcome back to the show Carla Orendorf. Carla is an artist and community organizer committed to the struggle for housing justice and liberation alongside the decriminalization of poverty. Carla is also a community-based researcher with UCLA's Luskin Institute on Inequality and Democracy, and we are so happy to have you back, Carla Orendorf.
Thanks so much for having me. It's great to be here with you both.
Yes. So can you start us off just with a general overview of the geography of LA and the locations where people without stable housing or shelter tend to gather and live, and how that's shifted over the past few years?
Yeah, I mean, I think we know that 75,000 people live on the streets and in their cars, in RVs, in every district, every neighborhood of Los Angeles. And so the problem is vast. It is everywhere. It's on, it affects every community and neighborhood in LA County. And, you know, when we're talking about, homelessness, just to put a name to it. I'm born and raised in Los Angeles. The people that, and we talk with and see hundreds of people every week. These are people that I went to high school with. These are people I know who are former teachers who may have been enlisted, who lost work or got sick. And so when we're talking about homelessness, we're talking about us. We're talking about you and I. And just to really humanize and ground, like what we're getting into, because most people that we know are from LA or from California, who were evicted at one point, lost their housing and ended up on the street. So people live everywhere. but I do want to emphasize a few changes that have happened in the last few years. People who are living on the streets are really actively dealing with laws like 4118, which has banned sitting, lying, sleeping on LA public sidewalks. And so homelessness really is this war that plays out on LA's public sidewalks, where people would prefer not to live, but have no other choice but to live. And so we see people you know, on major intersections, but also smaller streets. But 4118 has also impacted areas where people sleep for safety and out of necessity, like outside of shelters, near hospitals and schools. And the reason why people live there is for safety, because people are seeking shelter.
Well, the word transient, we hear that word transient a lot. It's sometimes used to refer to the unhoused, of course, but just because someone doesn't have a roof over their head, well, that doesn't necessarily mean that that they're just passing by when we think of transient and another use of that word, does it? Tell us about some of the communities that you've worked with and how they live together and how they help each other.
Yeah, so I'm based in the San Fernando Valley. Our mutual aid organization is called Aetna Street Solidarity. And when we started in 2020, we were supporting about 250 people that were living on a single street just outside the Van Nuys Orange Line. And so that's about as transient as it gets, because we're right outside of a metro station. However, we learned that people were living along the metro line for years. And these were people that had grown up a few blocks away from where the metro stop was in the neighborhood of Van Nuys. And that really blew our minds that people here who are so much a part of the community, had grown up here, gone to school here, worked here, had children here, were now being cast out and forced to live outside. So there's a lot of intersections, I would say, that that come with houseless communities. We support a community known as the Compound, is what they they've called it, and it's off of the 405 freeway, and it's around 75 people. It's an intergenerational community of young people, elders, people living with disabilities, but around 75 people who are currently living on federal lands off the freeway, who support each other with basic needs, with shelter. They cook for each other. They organize their own medical care. They ensure that there are porta potties on site. They organize their own trash pickup. And so these are some of the things that, you know, should be available to every person, whether you're housed or unhoused in this city, because we don't function as human beings without having our basic needs met. But if you're unhoused, all of your time is spent towards organizing around your basic needs. And so these are folks like that we're talking about who are deeply grounded in this community, who have so many different experiences and stories to share. But I think they're unique in that we often aren't really seeing encampments. There aren't many large encampments where people are able to meet each other's needs. They're often broken up at this point by laws like 4118. And it makes us wonder why, why is it so threatening to have people who otherwise have been left out and are forced to provide for themselves? Why is that such a threat to the neighborhood or to the city? And there's lots of, I think, explanations for that. But one thing that that I think is really, we have to learn from communities like the Compound, from Etna Street. And these are just one examples. These are just among the ones that we know in the San Fernando Valley. But from Venice to Skid Row to Hollywood to South LA to Northeast LA, there are communities of houseless people who've been organizing for human rights and dignity, for basic sanitation, for trash pickup for decades. And so it's part of a legacy of houseless and poor people's organizing that communities like the Compound are connected to and are learning from and leading the way in how we can actually support people who are living outside and meeting their demands for housing for everyone.
Mm. Thank you. Thank you for that. No, I think we, if I may, I think we, I'm guilty of this myself. I think we sometimes think that the people we see living in the streets, we don't stop to think about the fact they may have been living 100 yards away for much of their life or for some portion of their life. They may have gone to the local school that they're camping outside of. But they fell on hard times, often for no fault of their own. And we don't think of that enough. And the fact that they're banding together and trying to do something for themselves constructively is something I think doesn't get reported in the news enough either. But I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Maria. Go ahead.
Oh, no. No worries. Well, Carla, I'd love to talk about the wildfires, the catastrophic wildfires we all had in January, especially Pacific Palisades and Altadena areas. And because so many homes were lost, so many structures, there's sometimes a misconception that only homeowners were impacted. Can you explain how the fires also impacted unhoused, unsheltered people as well, and in what ways?
So in our area in the San Fernando Valley, a houseless community that I was talking about earlier had no reprieve from the air that was coming down from the Palisades fire, from Eaton, Hearst, and the Kenneth fire. And so the San Fernando Valley is like a bowl. And so people were being, the air quality was horrible and people had no place to shelter. And so we saw really concerning health impacts. We saw people getting dizzy, reporting that there being smoke in their periphery when they were outside, headaches, nausea, people. We had to take around 12 people that we knew personally to hospitals. We during that time, we tried to shelter as many people in hotel rooms. Our understanding is that the response from the county was that they offered 60 hotel vouchers total, and our small neighborhood mutual aid group was able to house more people during that time than the entire city was, as far as how, like, as far as the houseless response to the wildfire specifically. So people at the same time, while the wildfires were raging, were still being ticketed, were still being forced off of streets, and sweeps continued. So all of that was happening while the wildfires, while all personnel, our focus really should have been on making sure that people were safe, and were had shelter, and the city is really hell-bent on making sure that houseless people are being treated poorly and are being discriminated and harassed, even during an emergency like that. So that still continued. What the city continued to do. There was a true lack of response, a failure for people living in motels, city-run motels, where people really needed support. There was very little support, and people living outside had no break. And so we did what we could, but it was very chaotic, very stressful. And we had to we did our own survey with UCLA medical students and students in public health around what were the impacts for unhoused communities specifically during the wildfires, because we knew no one was going to really document those conditions or what people were facing, other than those who truly care and were seeing things on the ground. And so from those surveys, we were able to across the city, from downtown to Pasadena to the west side and in the San Fernando Valley, survey 100 people on what the impacts were, which were very serious. People are still facing health challenges from the wildfires, and also what some of the solutions could be. And I'm not sure if we'll have time to get into that, but I think what is illuminating from that survey is the fact that people have very grounded contributions and ideas around, when we're faced with something like a wildfire. Houseless people said we should designate metro stations as safe zones where people can evacuate to, where supplies and things that people need can be readily made available. And I thought that was such a beautiful example of why don't we activate metro stations in an emergency so people can easily find and access what they need, and support each other more easily. So those are some of the things that we learned from the lack of response from our city, but also we're incredibly moved by the community response and the mutual aid that came through during that time. It was life-changing to be part of that, to witness that and experience that. And that, to me, I think, is the real story. That's what Los Angeles is. And we don't forget that houseless people were also part of that response and also have things to contribute, but were also really impacted by the fires. Our friends with COPD, who were on oxygen tanks, needed to be put up into hotels. And so that was done privately and through community fundraising so that people, who really wouldn't have, I truly don't know what would have happened, but those effects, we need to be able to act, and we need to be able to take care of our people.
Yeah, gee whiz. On websites, I'm just thinking as I'm listening to you, on websites and in press releases that come from the city and the county, oh, they often sound very sympathetic, when they're talking about homeless services and the unhoused people and so forth. But then their actions, which get less press, seem to be far less sympathetic and seem to be more in keeping, oh, I don't know what real estate developers or the Chamber of Commerce or somebody would be putting out. Do you agree that officials are sending mixed messages? And if so, well, can you give us perhaps an example or two?
Yeah, so the city is often very guilty of this doublespeak, which really confuses the public. And one thing I re really want to emphasize is that people do care about homelessness, and people do want, from Measure H to Measure A, people are willing to put and vote for things that actually address and solve homelessness. So Angelenos do care. I think our city has been very guilty of this double speak, and I think they're mostly interested in catering to developers. Even with InsideSafe and with laws like 4118, that was really the primary, that was the vehicle through which they were promoting housing policy. So they were saying, like, this is what's going to actually, they were calling it a civil rights campaign. If you remember, Mark Ridley Thomas called 4118 the civil rights moment of our time and of our era. So it's so, it's dystopian, but it's deeply insincere and disrespectful to the public, and it's led us so far from what is actually needed. And so that kind of doublespeak is hard to undo, but it's possible. So an example of that, the Mark Ridley Thomas example, of course, but just to emphasize that if you look at the 4118 law, so much of that is about clearing spaces, and it has nothing to do with housing. And so we can, if we look at the law ourselves, and we often, we have to look at policy directly. We call it street law. It's really important that people have, we have to each one teach one. And we're perfectly capable of being able to understand laws that are being crafted against poor and working class people. And that's a good example of that. But most of our housing budget goes towards policing and enforcement. And I think that's why we're not able to account for over $2 billion, is because it went to LAPD in overtime enforcement of 4118. And we that all falls under a housing budget. And so that we're dealing with decades of insincerity and leading the public to, to stomach this. And for us, it's really important, and it's really clear as people's movements. We very rarely hear the stories of houseless people who've been organizing and advocating and fighting for change. Because when we do hear their voices, it becomes really clear there's such a disconnect from what politicians say and the reality in which we live. And it is our goal for people to have to confront that, but also get beyond that, because there's an actual world to win, and there are things that we can do. We have to fight for what's right. And if our city and our state is unwilling to do that or provide those things for us, we have to do that ourselves. So that's our commitment to that. And politicians make careers off of lying about houseless people and, trying to pit us against one another.
Well, I wanted to briefly ask you this one. You covered it a little bit, but about LASA, for example. It's been under scrutiny for mismanaging billions of dollars. What can you tell us about LASA? And does the blame for homelessness, the homelessness crisis, lie solely on their shoulders? And I think I know what the answer to that is going to be.
Yeah, so just because it's been a little confusing, some dates. On Tuesday, April 8th, City Council voted unanimously to explore withdrawing from LHASA, which stands for the Los Angeles Homelessness Service Authority. That was 1 week after LA County supervisors voted to end hundreds of millions of dollars in funding. So they voted to pull nearly $350 million a year in funding from LHASA. Around reports of accountability and transparency. And so this is a big deal. This is going to majorly impact the future of homelessness services. We're also seeing LA County Board of Supervisors cutting funds from several other homelessness service programs, including those that aim to prevent people from becoming unhoused in the first place. So it's right now things are really rough, and we're in a spot where people LASA for a long time has been used as kind of the carrot before the stick. And I just ground us in like what happens on the day-to-day and the reality that people who are unhoused, who are dealing with things like sweeps, like sweeps don't house people, and we know that's the bottom line. And yet that is what most if you're unhoused in LA, you're faced with sweeps and criminalization every day. And so you're already What is a really difficult situation is already made harder with every agency really not working for you or working with you even. And so that to me is really important to emphasize, and also means that Lhasa is neither the beginning nor the end of what needs to be done. I think Lhasa, the defunding of Lhasa means that there is kind of a vacuum that exists now of power and accountability. I would argue that that vacuum has always been there. People want to talk about the problem, but they don't want to actually talk about what's really needed. We don't actually move on really practical solutions that houseless people offer all the time, which is all these vacant lots that are county owned. Why can't a community self-manage them and be supported with resources? And why can't we actually be working, why can't the city actually work with us in being able to keep people safe and to keep people, instead we scatter people like seeds because we want to disappear the problem. So that's my take on the Lhasa situation, but it's a huge right now we live in a huge vacuum. And for us, the one of the groups that have come out of all of this is it's a small group, but it's a mighty group. And we hope that there is more commitment to homeless union organizing, which is what has just sprouted out of the last year or so, was the need for a homeless union in the San Fernando Valley. And, where agencies may not be able to, be held accountable, or we don't know where the money is. We need to be actually looking to community-based solutions and people, not just in Los Angeles, but there's in the Bay Area, there's Wood Street Commons, there's Where Do We Go Berkeley. There's organizers across the state of California who are providing real solutions. There's another group in Sacramento. There's the Sacramento Homeless Union. And so there's so much community leadership to look towards when something like Lhasa falls or fails to actually address our issues. And there's a lot more to be said about that, but I think
Well, I was going to say, because sadly we are running out of time, and we just have a few minutes left. I was to say, forget our whatever questions we might have still had. You've been wonderful. And what would you like people, our listeners, to know for the last few minutes that we have with you this afternoon? What do you think are the most important thing we ought to be keeping in mind as we, as citizens of this city, think about the unhoused situation?
To go back to the wildfires, there was an important survey that came from LA Barometer that talked about how Angelenos in unstable housing were the most likely to shelter wildfire evacuees. So
Wow.
it wasn't people with stable housing. It wasn't the city or the state or FEMA. It was people who were already living in unstable housing themselves. And people that we know living in encampments are often evicted because they're housing people that have no other place to go.
Wow.
And people living in city and state-run programs are not allowed guests or visitors. So for us, the answer is always community and organizing. It also means we need to, homelessness is not an individualized, we can't reduce it to the level of the individual. There are so many reasons why people fall into homelessness, but at the end of the day, people don't have a home and they have nowhere to go. And so what we're seeing are thousands of experiments in people trying to survive, that I think should be resourced and supported. And we need to be recognizing encampments and people that are living who are unhoused currently, who are organizing for community determination. We need to find a way to one, recognize them, and we have to be able to negotiate our needs and our demands, because people have the best ideas on the ground, and none of their ideas are ever listened to, and so we're actually killing the problem, or we're killing the solution, and it's getting us deeper and further into the problem. And so I would say, look out for the San Fernando Valley Homeless Union and other groups that are going to be unionizing around homelessness who are themselves unhoused, because there are so many answers to our problems. And to me, that is incredibly hopeful that it's people with the least who give the most, and have the most to say. So there are answers to our problems. There are things that we can do. We just have to look to the communities that are actually ready to lead.
Wow. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, Maria, I guess we have to say good afternoon to our guest.
Yes, thank you so much, Carla Orendorf, for being back. And we want to have you on again, hopefully sooner rather than later, because it's been a year. I couldn't believe it was that long. But thank you so much. You always are able to give us just this seeds, pearls of wisdom. And yeah, just how can people find you or find the information? Leave us with a little something for listeners to do.
Yeah, so we work in tandem with a lot of different organizations, including Palms Unhoused Mutual Aid, PUMA, LA Street Care. We are Etna Street Solidarity. There's Venice Justice Coalition. We all work together to support each other. There are more that I'm forgetting, All Power Free Clinic. But we are in coalition and in community together, because it is incredibly important that we are organizing citywide, because there are 75,000 people living outside, who have incredible insight into how we actually address homelessness in a way that actually, in my opinion, saves us all. It actually is, if we don't see ourselves as suffering as a result of decades of criminalization and a system that is brutally unfair to poor people, then we need to re-examine our position and join the fight. It is so important that we join the fight.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And now we will take a very brief station ID break, and then we'll be right back with you, friends.
This is the moment where KPFK is needed most, because mainstream media's coverage is not balanced and reliable. It's expensive for KPFK to continue our fair and equal coverage, which includes broadcasting the voices of people on the ground and those speaking truth to power. If you value reliable, unfiltered news coverage, support your independent radio station today by calling 818-985-5735. Hit option 2. Any amount helps. Pledge online at kpfk.org.
Well, and we are right back with you, my friends. We are right back with you. You're still listening to the Lawyers Guild Show here on KPFK. I'm Jim Lafferty, along with Maria Hall. We're co-hosts of the show. And we have to do just a minute or two, I guess, of business before we introduce our next guest to bring this problem we've been talking about into the state level, and where there's some rather alarming things going on and possibly some positive things going on. As you've been hearing now, we are into a spring fund drive. What we do now with our fund drives, as you can tell, is spend very little part of each hour asking you to help us. The kind of program that we bring you, I think you will agree, is the kind of program you don't hear anyone else. I dare say our last guest and our next guest are not on the radio and on CNN and ABC every night talking about the homeless problem. No, indeed, we're talking about some local crime or some celebrity who just stubbed their toe or something. So it's very unique what you get here at KPFK. And the only reason we can continue doing that, though, is not because of government money, I can assure you. And that may be gone for all public radio stations anyway in the near future, but because of you, my friends. because you call us, you give us your pledges several times during the year. You're members of the station. You can be a member of the station for merely $25 pledge. You do that by calling, as people have been suggesting from other shows this afternoon, 818-985-5735. Choose option two. That'll get you right to what you want. You can go on our website at kpfk.org and find all sorts of ways that we say thank you when you make a contribution of various sizes. We have films to give to you, books to give to you, T-shirts, mugs, you name it. It's available as thank you gifts, but we hope that the gift is the programming itself. We feel that the programming itself ought to be enough for those contributions. I know it is for me. It is for Maria ourselves. The staff here is underpaid. They keep working here because they believe in the station so much. You're listening. We believe you believe in the station. So help us out at this time by making that call to 818-985-5735, option two. We're going to get right to our programming now, but you can make a call. You can be listening as you're waiting for your call to be taken. And we'll continue with our programming, and we'll probably do this again maybe at the end of the hour. But we devote almost all the hours now to programming itself. So let me introduce our next topic. In the past year, taking this now to the statewide level, in the past year, over 330,000 Californians experienced homelessness. And that number is probably lower than the reality of this shameful situation. 30% of California's renters pay over half of their income to have a roof over their head. More and more of our unhoused sisters and brothers find themselves arrested as criminals for doing what? Sleeping on the streets or in the park because they have nowhere else to go, even when there are no shelters around. The law now is such that they can be arrested. A significant portion of California's unhoused are working people. Everybody thinks, well, they're just sitting around there. They're just some kind of bum. The significant portion are working people, sometimes more than one job, but earning too little to afford the expense of housing here in California, as well as food and clothing and medicine for themselves and their families. And all of this in California, which is the fourth or fifth largest economy in the world. Well, our guest today for this, who will discuss this shameful and persistent problem, is attorney Kath Rogers. Ms. Rogers is a senior staff attorney at the ACLU of Southern California's Dignity for All project, where she works to advance the rights of unhoused community members through litigation and policy advocacy. Prior to joining the ACLU, Ms. Rogers served as a program manager and adjunct professor at the University of Southern California, helping to develop a first-of-its-kind undergraduate clinical program. And I'm proud to say Kath Rogers is also a past and a wonderful executive director of the National Lawyers Guild here in Los Angeles. Well, Attorney Kath Rogers, a warm welcome back to the Lawyers Guild show.
Thanks, Jim. It's always so good to be with you and Maria here.
Kath, let's start off this way. I wonder, should having a roof over one's head be considered a civil right? I ask that, I guess, because is that why the American Civil Liberties Union has a terrific attorney like you working on the issue of the unhoused in our state? Do other countries treat housing as a civil right? Do we treat it? It doesn't seem like we treat it that way in this country.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would say emphatically, yes, we should treat it as a civil right. But not only should we treat housing as a civil right, but we should recognize that it's a human right.
Yes.
Historically in our country, we have focused on civil rights, political rights in particular, which are negative rights, you know, to be free of government interference, and less so on economic and cultural rights. And so, you know, increasingly, I think at the ACLU, we're recognizing that we can't enjoy our civil and political rights unless we have economic rights. You know, how do we enjoy, you know, our rights as part of a democratic system without a roof over our heads, without, you know, healthcare, without food to eat? You know, we can't truly thrive and participate in our democratic institutions without housing. So, yeah, we advocate for the human right to housing. We believe it should be embedded in our California Constitution. And we believe that all, you know, advocates should, you know, trumpet that as loudly as we can, that we need economic rights, the right to housing. You know, housing should not be a luxury for only those who can afford it. We all benefit when all of us have housing. And in the richest, you know, nation on earth, it's just criminal that we don't. And to your question about countries that do have a right to housing. A number do have a human right to housing in their constitution, some more successfully than others. Mm-hmm. One that I would look to as sort of an example is Finland. Finland has a right to housing in their constitution, and they've backed that up with large-scale investments, which we have not done either. We haven't backed up our, you know, we haven't codified a human right to housing, and we haven't backed it up with the investments needed to actually even make a dent in solving the housing crisis.
Well, yeah, speaking of California and how wealthy it is, it has the greatest percentage of its population living in poverty. Is that a consequence of the cost of housing and rent here?
Yes. In short, yes. the data is really clear that in, you know, even though housing is a crisis all around the country, in places where housing costs are higher, that's where we have the highest rates of houselessness. And so, you know, even though we have a national housing crisis, we see cities that have really large percentages of unhoused people, like Los Angeles, New York, San Francisco. And that's because of the high cost of housing and, you know, low vacancy rates and things like that that are concentrated in cities like that. And so, yeah, we know what works. Evidence shows what works is we need affordable housing. And so those structural issues benefit all of us when we solve them, right? So when we solve houselessness, it not only benefits people who are currently living on the street, but everybody, right? Because the housing crisis impacts all of us. Many of us are a paycheck away from becoming unhoused. And so when we reduce the cost of housing for everybody, when we invest in housing first, it helps folks who are living on the street as well as folks who are precariously housed and reduces everyone's housing costs.
I wonder, Mayor Karen Bass ran for her position with the promise of solving, well, or at least making some decent major headway with the issue of the unhoused. Has she been able to keep that campaign promise?
Well, I think it depends who you ask and who you compare her to. I do remember that she ran against this horrible Trumpian billionaire, Rick Caruso, back in the day. So if we compare Bass to, you know, her alternative, there's, you know, that's not a, you know, not a comparison I think we'd want to have. But Bass's signature program is Inside Safe, which is an interim hotel placement program that certainly has issues. You know, I think talking to folks living in Inside Safe is the best way to assess, you know, the success of it. But what we need to see and what, you know, what Mayor Bass and mayors all around the country need to do is invest in permanent housing. We need affordable permanent housing. We know what solves houselessness, and it's affordable housing. So, you know, one thing that I think is really important for everyone to understand is separating out individual stories from structural causes, because I think when we talk about individual stories, you know, everyone has their own story, and it's important to understand those, and it's important to really, you know, validate those. But the system is failing all of us, you know, at the local, the state, and the national level. We're not investing in housing in the ways that we should. We need, for city governments, you know, and Mayor Bass included, we need state governments and we need the federal government all to be investing massively more than they are, because we know what works. And often people get blamed for being on the street. And one metaphor that I really like is musical chairs, where you talk about, you know, in the game of musical chairs, there's not enough chairs, right? And so when you go around the circle, someone is not going to have a chair.
Yeah.
And it's not because, you know, that person, you know, couldn't get to the chair fast enough, right? It's because there's just not enough chairs for everyone. And similarly, there's just not enough affordable housing for everyone. And so we can't continue blaming folks who are on the street or who are precariously housed. We need to really look at systems, you know, Mayor Bass, as well as, you know, our state and our federal government.
Yes.
Well, Kath, your employer, the ACLU of Southern California, is supporting California State Assembly Bill 1165, entitled the California Housing Justice Act. If the act becomes law, it will require the legislature to make ongoing investments, like you're talking about, and supposedly at the scale needed to solve our housing crisis. How would it go about doing that? And what is the likely cost of fully complying with the Act's requirements on the number of structures that would need to be built?
Yes. Yeah, we are really excited about AB 1165, the California Housing Justice Act, which is going to be up before the Housing Assembly or the Assembly's Housing Committee at the end of this month on the 30th. So we're encouraging all of our legislators to vote yes and our listeners to write to their legislators about it. Basically, this bill is aimed at addressing the fact that historically in our state, we've addressed housing spending with one-time lump sum bonds, which is never going to solve the crisis. Right now, we spend less than 0.5% of the state budget on housing. And if you ask anybody, you know, on the street, how much do you think our state invests in housing? Someone might say like 20% or 50%, you know, but given that we are in a crisis, we are just not spending nearly enough to meet the need. So when voters get, you know, this is the number one issue on voters' minds. And when they think, you know, what is our state doing? The fact is we know what works. There are a lot of successful programs that are housing first models, which is providing people with affordable housing, which might mean deeply affordable or free, depending on what you can afford. But we know that that works to get folks off the street. It's just that we're not funding anywhere near at scale. And that's what this bill is aimed to address, is basically require the legislature to create a fund and invest annually in that fund, and also to meet the scale of the need. And depending on what research you look at, that need would be somewhere between the range of $8 billion and $18 billion annually. Wow. And so that will require us to spend, you know, between, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8% of our state budget. And that's what we need to do if we really want to get serious about solving this crisis.
Well, yeah, also, correct me if I'm wrong, Kath, but Assembly Bill 1165, excuse me, Assembly Bill 1165, it would also build what's called a strategic roadmap to end the housing and homelessness crisis. What's a strategic roadmap in this case? What would it entail?
Yeah, well, it's surprising that we don't already have sort of a multi-year funding strategy for housing, but our state does not have one. You know, with these historic one-time investments, there's no long-term, you know, multi-year strategy to fund housing at all in our state right now. Wow. So this will require the state to do just that, to create a multi-year plan, and the plan will assess, you know, the actual amount that's needed to solve the crisis, and will require the legislature to budget for that. You know, there's been basically, you know, just kind of every year in the budget cycle, a legislator will propose some new bond measure that's a one-time stopgap measure. And we can't continue year to year existing with stopgap measures. We have to have an actual funding plan to meet the scale of the crisis.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And Kath, I know you were listening to the earlier portion with Carla Orndorff talking about Lhasa and the losing of $2 billion somehow for homeless services.
Yes.
Can you talk about how AB 1165 would create new accountability measures to ensure that funds were being used correctly? How would AB 1165 address that problem?
Yeah, well, it's funny. I mean, it's not funny. It's tragic that what Carla was talking about at the county level with Lhasa is so similar to what's happening at the state level. There was a huge audit by the state's auditor, and it showed that basically California is not tracking how it spends the money on houselessness and housing. So how are we spending this money? No one seems to know. No one seemed to be tracking it. The state doesn't have current information on ongoing costs and the effectiveness of its programs. The California Interagency Council on Homelessness, which we would think would be tracking spending, doesn't have that data. And so there's just not a consistent method right now for gathering that information related to houselessness. So this would create basically an annual reporting process for houselessness funding. It would be driven by community stakeholders who have lived expertise, who have affordable housing expertise, who have houselessness expertise. And there would be basically metrics, and every year, you know, there would have to be a reporting on, you know, how effective the programs were, how the money exactly was spent, and it would be publicly available so that people can actually see this, you know, transparent data that and how, you know, what goals were met and what exactly the money went toward.
And that should be a refreshing change, wouldn't it? Well, also, Assembly Bill 1165 would also help ensure, would it not, that decisions made under the Act would be shaped not simply by the quote-unquote experts, but by the people who have for decades been unhoused, been failed by the policy choices that led to the crisis in the first place. Explain how this is designed to work.
Yeah, absolutely. This bill would require that folks with lived expertise, both in terms of being unhoused or being precariously housed, would be part of shaping both the financing plans as well as the annual auditing process to help hold the state accountable. Because like Carlo was talking about in the first section of the show, you know, folks know the answers, and the people who are living this day in and day out have the knowledge, the insights about the challenges that are out there, the barriers that are out there, what kind of bureaucratic hurdles and discrimination they're facing every day to try to get the services that they need. And so that's built into the bill, is to have folks with lived expertise helping to shape and lead these, not only the planning, but also the auditing as well.
Well, Kath, can you tell us who some of the sponsors are of AB 1165 and how our listeners can help in securing its passage, and what's the level of state support that it already has?
Yeah, absolutely. We at ACLU California Action are one of the co-sponsors, and then we're joined by our movement partners, ACE, or Alliance of Californians for Community Empowerment, Bring California Home Coalition, Corporation for Supportive Housing, Housing Now, Policy Link, National Alliance to End Homelessness. So those are the co-sponsors. And we also have a growing list of endorsing organizations. And right now, the bill is teed up to go to the Assembly Housing Committee on the 30th. And so letters in support for that committee are due next week. We have another 7 days to collect letters of support. So if any of the listeners are with an organization, we'd really encourage you to submit a letter or join our letter, and we can make sure that that gets to the legislators who are on the committee. And our website for ACLU Cal Action has that endorsement form, as well as some ways to get involved. And it's one of our sponsored bills this year. So you can just go to aclucalaction.org. That's ACLU Cal, which is C-A-L, action.org. And then it you should see it right on the homepage there. And then you can click the link on the homepage.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, let's hope. Let's hope. And I wish we did have more time, but we have to do a little bit of business. Kath Rogers, as always, wonderful, and we admire your work. We salute your work. It is so critically needed. It's hard to think of anything, frankly, in California that is needed more. So we appreciate the work you're doing in that regard. We hope our listeners will take your advice and go to aclucalaction.org and sign those endorsement letters, lobby their own member of the state assembly to get this bill going. And so that hopefully we'll have something finally in California where we can be less ashamed of how we're not treating our homeless sisters and brothers. Cal Rogers, thanks for joining us here today on Law and the Lawyers Guild Show.
Thanks so much, Jim and Maria.
Thank you. Well, just a little piece of business. Yeah, this is our spring fund drive, friends. You know, I've said this before, and it's true, and maybe you're getting tired of hearing it, but when you contribute to us during one of these fund drives, you're contributing to the broader progressive movement in Los Angeles. You're not just giving to us. Why is that? Well, because Well, we just heard Kath Rogers, and before that, we heard Carla. You know, we have guests on every week from the movements, the movement on behalf of the unhoused, the movement on behalf of ending racism, sexism, the climate change, the fascism that's growing in the country under Trump. When we have these movement people on, they get publicity for what they're doing. They get more members. They get more people turning out to the events that they advertise, in a sense, while they're talking to us and we're quizzing them about what they're doing these days. And so you make a contribution that keeps us on the air. We're the propaganda arm, if you will, for the progressive movement of LA. It doesn't get the corporate media. It doesn't want to talk to you about the homeless issue. It doesn't want to talk to you about racism and sexism. But we do. We want to bring these kinds of movement people to you on a daily basis, on a weekly basis here on the Lawyers Guild Show, but other shows here on the station day in and day out. So we urge you to make a contribution to the station. We don't. The movement doesn't want to lose us as the voice of the movement, the voice of the progressive movement here in L.A. And you can keep that voice alive by calling us at 818-985-5735. And then select option 2. That'll get you right to where you want to go, or go to the website. Maria, you often talk about what can be found on the website.
Yes, and the website to me is the easier option, but you know, that's kpfk.org. Super easy. Go right on there. Big button to say pledge online here. And there are various premiums on there, including some CDs and, you know, the bumper sticker, tote bag. I mean, that's a great conversation starter when you're waiting in line at the grocery store, your KPFK tote bag. But and of course, the $2,000 dinner and a show with Amy Goodman. And Jim, I thought that we could do something like that. Dinner and a show with Jim Lafferty.
Or for $25.
Yeah, whatever.
No. That's
make
not.
Your best offer.
That's right. Well, with Amy Goodman, it'd sure be worth it. No, we have lots. Yeah, because we know it's no joke. There are people listening to us right now in their car, perhaps driving. Maybe it's a lawyer driving from one case to the next or one courtroom to the next who's got some bucks in the bank.
I know. And organizers, too. You know, a lot of them, they make a living, and we're not asking for a lot, just asking to pitch in. You know, Jim and I do this voluntarily. It is a lot of work. A lot of the hosts here and producers do things voluntarily. It's worth it. We're willing to put in our blood, sweat, and tears into continuing to produce these shows, but you do have to help us a little bit as well.
Yeah. And I don't know if we've looked up some of the ways we do say thank you this time, but there are always, as Maria was just mentioning, some CDs and some movies you won't necessarily have a chance to see anywhere else. I'm not talking about mainstream movies, you know, made by Fox or MGM or somebody, but I'm talking about documentary films that are often informative and educational and entertaining as well. I'm talking about often very wonderful collections from some of your favorite musicians who have donated, and we have their CDs that we can give you when you make a donation of a certain amount of money. We say thank you by offering up one of these things as a thank you gift to you. There's lots of ways we say thank you. We say we'd like to think that we thank you enough by bringing you the kind of unique program you get on KPFK. You know, Pacifica Radio has been around now for some generations. There's nothing like it in the country. There are a lot of wonderful public radio stations, don't get me wrong. But those public radio stations, Evelyn, most of the people you hear on those stations are elected officials, prominent individuals. They're not the grassroots. They're not the progressive movements of our cities and state, as you hear here week after week after week on the Lawyers Guild Show and so many of the other good programs here on KPFK. We are unique. There is simply no other radio voice in the country like it. And given the competition these days for time on radio voices, it's expensive. It's expensive to maintain this station. We've cut a lot of costs in order to be able to bring you shorter fund drives and spend less time on each show talking to you about our need for funds. But that doesn't mean that our need for funds has gotten less. In fact, it's gotten more. It's just that these are such terrible times. We want to spend every minute that we can on these shows bringing you content and not simply pleading for your money. And we are. Taking a few minutes today just to do that. We'll be done with the show now and in the next minute or so, we'll start hearing our music and have to say goodbye. So as we do that, please pick up the phone at 818-985-5735. Choose option two. Please give us a call. It can be $25, but gee whiz, it can be $50. It can be $100. It can be $500. Those of you with good jobs, contribute for those who maybe aren't working, because you may not be able to contribute a dime right now because of your own situation. That's okay. We want you to keep listening, my friends. We're sorry you're in that position. Maybe you'll get some inspiration from listening here. So now we have to say goodbye to you until next week. Until next week at the same time, Maria Hall, on behalf of Maria, myself, Jim Lafferty, the Lawyers Guild Show, you stay healthy, my friends. You stay active. You keep standing up for your rights. Preacher man, don't tell me. Heaven is on-